Stay tuned for more Jazz America with me, Russ Davis, right after the news on VOA 1.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Topping the news, the U.S. Defense Department says Iraqi forces have driven Islamic State fighters out of the western town of al-Baghdadi, close to a military base where U.S. forces are training Iraqis. Earlier, Irina Bokova, the head of the U.N. Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, condemned the bulldozing of the ancient Assyrian city of Nimrud in northern Iraq by Islamic State militants.
We know that they have been destroyed, and we know also that apparently there were trucks that were taking away some of the other statues. We don't know whether they're destroyed or there will be trafficked. So it's, we know for sure, because we are in constant contact with the government of Iraq, that there is a destruction in this famous status, Al-Masur status.
The militants from the Islamic State group began bulldozing Nimrud on Thursday. United Nations mediators led a second day of peace talks between Libyan rival governments Friday in Morocco, with parties to the talks expressing confidence in the progress. Libya's lucrative oil facilities have been at the center of the battles between the two sides. A leaked African Union report calls for South Sudan's President Salva Kiir and his main rival, former deputy and rebel leader Riek Machar, to be barred from a transitional government and for the country to be placed under AU control. There was no immediate response from the South Sudanese government. A rebel spokesman in Addis Ababa called for the full report to be released. This is VOA News. Here in the U.S., President Obama said Friday he fully stands behind the Justice Department's decision not to bring civil rights charges against a white police officer who killed an unarmed African-American teenager during a confrontation in the city of Ferguson, Missouri, last year. He also said he backs the department's finding that the town's white police force has been biased against African-Americans.
The city of Ferguson will now have to make a decision. Are they going to enter into some sort of agreement with the Justice Department to fix what is clearly a broken and racially biased system? Or, if they don't, then the Justice Department has the capacity to sue the city.
Earlier, Mr. Obama told a radio talk show host that racial bias in Ferguson was not isolated. Ferguson, a St. Louis suburb, erupted into violence last August when the white officer, Darren Wilson, shot and killed Michael Brown in a confrontation after the teen was suspected of shoplifting. Meanwhile, President Obama will lead a march later today commemorating the 50th anniversary of the march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. On March 7, 1965, millions of television viewers were sickened to see police beat hundreds of civil rights marchers as they tried to cross the bridge, the first leg of a march from Selma to the state capital, Montgomery. U.S. Central Intelligence Agency is launching a sweeping reorganization aimed at enhancing the spy agency's cyber abilities and plugging gaps in the espionage operations. CIA Director John Brennan said in an announcement on Friday that the move comes after outside experts spent months analyzing the agency's management structure. Unemployment in the U.S. dropped in February, with the economy getting a net gain of 295,000 jobs. Here's VOA's Jim Randall.
Friday's report from the Labor Department says the jobless rate fell to 5.5%. That's 0.2% lower than the prior month and down more than 1 percentage point from a year ago. While the data showed a stronger job market than most economists had predicted, there are still 8.7 million people unemployed. There are also 6.6 million people who work part-time but want full-time jobs. Jim Randall, VOA News, Washington.
American film star Harrison Ford expected to make a full recovery after crash landing his single-engine airplane Thursday shortly after taking off from a California airport. Officials said the 72-year-old actor suffered a broken pelvis and ankle. You can get more news at our website, voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
This is Russ Davis, and I welcome you to another hour of the best of jazz, past and present, and conversation with the music makers. It's time for another hour of Jazz America, as we once again take a look at the marriage of pop, rock, and jazz. In the 100-plus years of jazz history, quite often jazz musicians, instead of writing their own songs, have simply taken popular songs of the day and turned them into jazz. We'll hear some more examples of that during this final hour of this week's edition of Jazz America, and we'll talk to two artists, drummer Lenny White and guitarist John Scofield, who've dabbled in the marriage of rock and jazz. But right now, we're going to play for you one of the major pop classics of all time. As we go back to 1968, the place is the Montreux Jazz Festival in Switzerland, and on stage, the great pianist Bill Evans, joined by bassist Eddie Gomez and drummer Jack DeJohnette, as they play a song made famous in a Walt Disney movie classic from 1937, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. It's been recut dozens and dozens of times over the years, but never better in a jazz setting than by Bill Evans. Someday My Prince Will Come, to begin this hour of VOA's Jazz America. Thank you. Miles Davis, just another of the greats of jazz history, who decided to take pop music of the day and turn it into a jazz piece. In this case, a song written by and made famous originally by pop artist Cyndi Lauper. The song Time After Time, Miles Davis made a specific comment that Cyndi Lauper really cherished, that he thought that was one of the fine writings in pop music of that day. And he turned it into jazz on his album You're Under Arrest. This is Russ Davis. Hope you're enjoying this edition of VOA's Jazz America with a special theme, the marriage of rock, pop, and jazz. And by the way, the guitarist that you just heard on that Miles Davis album, You're Under Arrest, was John Scofield, who joins us now to talk about why he chose jazz instead of pop, and also how he worked with Modesky, Martin, and Wood to take a song made famous by the rock band The Doors from the 1960s and turn it into jazz in the year 2014.
We were raised on in America on the British invasion, and Motown was
basically
monstrous music when we were growing up. So easily, anyone who goes into instrumental music and into blues or in jazz specifically, I always have to ask them what led you in that direction when you could easily have just stayed in the pop idiom.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think for me, it was really that I was so serious about music that, to tell you the truth, pop music, as much as I loved it, it seemed like, compared to jazz, it just always seemed like jazz was the real deal to me. And even though I loved pop music, it just took music a step further.
Who directed
creativity.
Your mother and father?
Not my mother and father, other musicians.
Huh.
Even back in, when I first did, like, this jazz guitar player, Alan Dean was his name, who I met when I was a teenager. Mm. He played in rock bands. I mean, guitar is a rock and roll instrument, so all of us played rock. But all those guitar players in rock bands in the 60s that were older than us, they would at least acknowledge Wes Montgomery and jazz music as being, you see, because the musics are so related. Any kind of R&B is related to jazz and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Anytime somebody was taking a little guitar solo or solo on any instrument, improvised solo in the middle of a Stax Volt record or a Motown tune or the Beatles, this was a jazz thing they were doing, kind of. They were improvising.
Sure.
So it was like, okay, there's this other kind of music where they do that solo thing, but they do it like that's the main part of the music. Mm-hmm. And so I just went for it kind of, intellectually in a way. And then I started to listen to Miles and Monk and Bill Evans and all this music, and I fell in love with it. Mm-hmm. But I still love pop music. Mm-hmm. I love the Beatles and Motown, as much as any music, probably.
were some fine improvisers in the band known as The Doors, including their terrific composer and keyboardist Ray Manzarek, who would take the songs on long extended passages, improvised, if you will, into the world of jazz. And, turnabout being fair play, the jazz group Modesky, Schofield, Martin, and Wood did a jazzy version of Light My Fire on their latest release, titled Juice. Hope you enjoyed that. More of the marriage of rock and jazz right now as we give you music from the 1974 release from Chet Baker titled She Was Too Good to Me, doing a version of a song that's been recorded more times than we could all count. From the department of I Wish I'd Written This One, here's Autumn Leaves, Chet Baker on Jazz America from VOA 1. Thank you. Chet Baker from 1974 with a little help on electric keyboards from Bob James. Hope you enjoyed that swingin' version of the classic, Autumn Leaves. More of our marriage of rock, pop, and jazz coming up. But first, I want to invite you to send me an email if you have a question, a comment, or maybe request for music. Whatever the case may be, I'd love to hear from you. And here is the email address to which you can write me. I'll give it to you twice. So write it down and get in touch. It's jazzamerica@voanews.com. That's jazzamerica, the two words written as one word, @ voanews.com. jazzamerica@voanews.com. And here's a message I've received not long ago, and it reads simply as follows. Hello, Russ. Thanks a lot for your music that we hear in Schaffhausen, Switzerland, almost every Sunday. We like to listen to you, Russ. Cheers from Max and Jeanette Boni from Schaffhausen, Switzerland. Well, thank you so much. Max and Jeanette, too. And tell you what, I think I'll dedicate a pop classic turned into jazz to your wonderful lady, Jeanette. How about that? It's the song made famous back in the 1970s by the pop duet Seals and Crofts. It's called Diamond Girl, and it was quite a big hit in its day. It's turned into jazz by the great vocalist and guitarist John Pizzarelli from his album Double Exposure. And here it is as we continue our investigation of the marriage of pop and jazz on this edition of VOA's Jazz America.
Precious stone, part of earth, what heaven has rained upon, makes no difference where you are, day or night time, you're like a shining star, and how could I shine? It's about you that I am, oh, darling girl. Never find another one like you. Part of me is deep down inside you. Can't you feel the whole world's turning? We are real. We are burning. Diamond girl. It's about you that I am, diamond girl. Mm-hmm.
This is Jackie Terrison, and you're listening to Jazz America with Russ Davis on The Voice of America.
Porter's classic, I Love Paris in the Springtime, from a gentleman who knows a little bit of something about that. He was born in Paris, from his album Ah Paris. Jackie Terrison, here on VOA's Jazz America. And preceding that, another salute to Paris, if you will. Charlie Parker from the classic album Charlie Parker with Strings, filled with a host of popular songs of the day turned into jazz, with that string section accompanying him. That was April in Paris that we heard, and quite a controversial album was Charlie Parker with Strings. Many people felt like Charlie Parker had vacated jazz and gone to a different world of music. But I beg to differ, because if you were listening closely to his version of April in Paris, you knew there was some serious improvisation going on from one of the greatest, if not the greatest, improvisers in all of jazz history, Charlie Yardbird Parker. This is Russ Davis, and let's continue now with our investigation of how rock and pop music has influenced jazz over the years with the song made famous by Led Zeppelin. Yes, that rock band from England, Led Zeppelin. They influenced the great American trio of Larry Coryell, Victor Bailey, and Lenny White. Coryell, Bailey, and White from the album Electric, coming up after we talk to the drummer in that trio, Lenny White, who gives us an idea of how rock and pop music could influence a jazz musician, seeing as though he has many different influences in his musical life.
And I can only have a good perspective if I can check out everything.
Mm-hmm.
In me doing what it is that I hear, I might have a little bit of that, a little bit of that. And I can't do that if I'm myopic. So I have to really be able to listen to everything. So I listen to everything. I listen to Alphonse. I listen to Eric Cravat. I listen to Tony, to Billy. I listen to everybody that played. I mean, I listen to Bernard Purdy. I listen to everybody, man. I mean, like, that's all about my playing. I have everybody, a little bit of everybody in my playing. Right. And in my music, I listen to all different kinds of musics. Mm-hmm. I mean, I listen to Sly. I listen to Jimi Hendrix. I listen to James Brown. I listen to Stravinsky. I listen to Ravel. You know, I listen to the Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin. I listen. If you see my wave play there, wait, you see all the different kind of things I got in there. You know, I got to do that.
Man, have you been collecting some memories and some music over the years or what?
Oh, yeah.
You have been. Looking back at the pantheon of great drummers, you've already mentioned Philly Joe Jones and Elvin Jones and Roy Haynes and we haven't even mentioned Art Blakey at this point.
There's six.
Talk to me.
My playing comes from these six guys. Art Blakey, Elvin Jones, Philly Joe Jones, Roy Haynes, Max Roach, and Tony Williams.
There we are.
Those are the guys that I got my greatest inspiration from. Now, on top of that, I listened to Clyde Stubblefield, Jabbo Stocks, who played with James Brown. Mm-hmm. I listened to John Bonham. I listened to Cozy Powell. I listened to Mitch Mitchell. I listened to all of my contemporary fusion guys. I listened to Orestes Villatoro. I listened to Chipito Ayres. I listened to Michael Shreve. I listened to everybody.
We'll be right back.
becomes jazz in the music of Larry Coryell, Victor Bailey, and Lenny White taking the Led Zeppelin classic Black Dog and turning it into jazz from their album Electric. This is Russ Davis, and I could go on for hours playing jazz pieces inspired by rock and pop music. Here's one of the most famous examples I can think of. Recorded in 1960 with an all-star cast joining him, including Elvin Jones on drums and McCoy Tyner on piano, here's the legendary John Coltrane with My Favorite Things, the Rodgers and Hammerstein classic on Jazz America from VOA 1. perfect example from 1960 of the marriage of pop music and jazz. John Coltrane, one of his most famous songs ever, My Favorite Things. This is Russ Davis. I hope you enjoyed the theme of this program, and I hope you'll join me on the next edition of Jazz America as we pay homage to the passing of one of the greats of jazz history, the wonderful trumpeter, educator, NEA jazz master, who passed away just a few days ago, the great Clark Terry. We'll return to the year 2005 and enjoy a presentation from the International Association for Jazz Education Conference. Clark Terry speaks to us, and we'll hear his music next week on Jazz America. Join me then, won't you?